Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How are you?
I'm sorry, I should allow more of a pause.
How are you?
How am I? Yeah, I'm still good. How are you?
It's okay.
Oh. All right. I'll take
Oh,
okay.
it is okay. It's quite, yeah. I just thought about yes, there perhaps is more ways to say it, but at least three ways to ask that question, or to pronounce, or to how you say it, which I guess have some small different meanings,
Yeah. If you
or the
say,
subtlety of language.
right, does Norwegian do this? I've got to ask, because, like in English, if you say, how are you? It's like everything's fucked, isn't it? But I want to know.
Yeah, and sometimes it's like imposing. You should feel bad, shouldn't you? Or something.
Oh, like it's telling the person that they're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, we have the same thing in Norwegian.
I hope everything is better than that this morning.
Yeah. Just before we started this recording, I guess, did I sweep the carpet under your feet? No. What's the idiom for changing plants right before the thing?
Pulling the rug out from under me.
Yeah, sweeping the rug is something else.
Yeah, you can do that too if you want, but it just raises a lot of dust.
So the dust that I previously swept under the rug is now out in the air.
This dust metaphor is out of control.
Because 2 weeks ago, I was invited by the Federation of Norwegian Professional Associations, which sounds very fancy, more
Doesn't it?
fan, yeah. In Norwegian, the name is the Academics, or Akademikerne, which is a trade union in Norway. And they invited me to sit on a panel on what graduates of the humanities could offer in the private sector.
And how did that go?
So I was introduced as the provocateur of the panel.
This will come as no surprise to anyone.
But I also did. I didn't fulfill the role, I guess, because,
What, that's how
yeah.
contrarian you are, though. I mean,
Yeah.
that's.
But I tried for a rant, and my rant was to reflect on how, air quotes, hard it is for a graduate in humanities to sort of get a job outside of the university or as a teacher. So it was like five tips to how to get a job in the private sector,
Can you
which
give a quick summing up for us, even though we're not in the union?
well, I try to say something about that you have to do quite a lot to get in that position, and I guess I perhaps stretched it a bit far for effect, but let's see, let's find my notes. So the first thing to do is to teach yourself to work and teach yourself to take free from work. I'm reading
Oh.
Norwegian now and talking English, so but
So the temptation to make a cheap joke about arts and the humanities graduates needing to be taught how to work is extremely high. But I won't
yeah.
make that joke.
But it's funny, but it could be funny because it is probably true.
How many? Yeah, go.
Yeah, because at least if you are an ambitious student of the humanities, you will work a lot and you will have passion, which makes you sit in for weekends and holidays and do stuff with your research if you are that far into it, or studies and so on, and you will talk about the stuff you study all the time and so on. So as a worker, you probably will get someone who knows passion, right? Mm. For something, which is a good thing. But it also comes with a backside, because, and this isn't exclusively for people in the humanities, but they will also have perhaps a harder time turning off that gear, or turning it down, perhaps. So they can easily get burned in a work environment.
It sounds like they'd become very good academics. That sounds like the academic disease. Mm. Always on.
Yeah. The second tip was not to bet all on one horse, but to bet some on a Trojan horse as well.
Is this the tip for graduates or the tip for employers?
I guess both. But at least for graduates, it's because someone tend to choose either the study program that are made for the academic pursuit, right? But I argue that you, as humanities students, should do also something completely different, which gives you an edge.
Monty Python 101.
Mm. Or statistics, or
right,
what a programming or whatever.
Right. Like, we don't have... Do you have in Norway the concept of a liberal arts degree? Because that's a thing that's largely missing from a UK education. And I would have loved, in retrospect, I would have loved to do something like that, where you just get to pick all kinds of things and then sew them together into one kind of thesis that transcends the subject.
You could do that, but there isn't much incentive to do it within the university system.
Right.
Mm. The third sort of life hack is to be ambitious and interested. Go figure.
Can you fake that as a
Probably.
Student or as a graduate? Like, if you've come out and you're just a bit tired and you owe, well, in the UK now, you would owe a lot of money unless you were well off and could pay your fees.
Yeah, but this address the apologism that occurs pretty often within the humanities and during the studies, because students of humanities are often preparing to be unemployed or have a hard time or and so on.
It's just expected.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism for something. But you can also just forget that and dive into it, both feet, and be ambitious and be interested in your subject and in the milieu around it.
Sorry, right? I'm laughing because I really thought for a moment you were going to say just forget that and just dive into being unemployed.
Mm. The fourth?
Own it. I'm just saying.
The fourth is... I have to do a bit of on-the-fly translation here. It's not that it's hard to translate this, but I can just ask you.
Hmm?
Ikke finn deg I ting.
I don't know what å finne I is.
Hmm.
I mean, I can kind of... No, I'm stuck. It could mean two things for me. I could go either way. Prepositions, man. Phrasal verbs in Norwegian.
Well, it was surprisingly hard to translate, but it means don't accept everything. Don't stand up to unfairness and so on.
Okay. What do you think happens? What made you write that?
Well, I wrote that because the university, it's said in Norway at least that the university is the best workplace but the worst employer.
Oh.
Right?
That's nice.
And we will come back to this,
quite
I
damning.
Guess.
But, yeah.
But there are mechanisms and social mechanisms in the university and the academy that aren't favorable for individuals, I guess. It's not perhaps healthy. It's competition and so on. And
there are some dark patterns in academia.
Yeah, indeed. So it needs people to call that out. And if you, I guess it isn't a recommendation for everyone, but if you do that and do it in a way that where you are involved, where you are being, for example, doing committee work or trying to have an impact, especially as students, because students have some power in the university, more than the temporarily employed, I guess. But if you do that, you will, in the meantime, also learn quite a lot about organizations and so on, which can be good in a career later.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that no one ever explains in education, like how companies work, how to be an employee.
Mm. And you will learn about a lot about how companies don't work.
Right, right. It would be much better if you just got a class on, like, here are all the anti-patterns that happen in organizations. And then you can get, like, they can send you off when you graduate. They can send you off with, like, a little bingo card where you've got all the kind of the possible combinations of things that are messed up. And then you can just get a little stamp and you just stamp them off as they occur.
You know that we have... Now we have to make that card.
Yeah. It's not going to fit on one sheet, even if we use 10-point font.
Yeah, and adding to that, you also have to train yourself to follow critique with some solutions, suggested solutions.
It's not
enough. People in the private sector digs solutions to problems.
Right.
Because the people from the humanities are pretty good with pointing out problems with this stuff. Not so good with pointing out solutions to it.
And you became an interaction designer. Why?
Did I though? Yeah. The fifth and last tip, life hack, is to do... And I guess this will be lost on you. Do as George Constanza in Seinfeld.
Which is to say?
There's this episode where he... So he is pretty much unemployed throughout the whole... Or unemployable throughout the whole series.
See how I'm not saying anything?
And but there's the one episode where he have a job interview and... Before it's done, it's interrupted. So it's in the air whether he got the job or not. I think the boss says, I want you to have the job. And leaves it there.
But doesn't actually offer him the job.
Yeah, exactly. But the next day, George Constanza just decides to meet up and begin the work.
Okay, unilaterally.
So this is my tip. Just
show up.
Do the work you want to have, right? Show up and do it. Because your title neither your title or your CV will be intuitively, it will be not probably be obvious why you should work wherever. So you have to prove yourself somewhat, or you have to show that you are able to do the work.
I'm kind of treading on interesting territory here. One of my many hot button issues is young people who are offered non-paying internships for a chance to get experience, which selectively favours people who can afford not to earn money for weeks or months at a time. So I don't know, it kind of feels like we're skirting around that a little bit.
Yeah, I guess the bar is much higher in Norway. To I think most internships are paid.
Most, but not all.
Yeah, because it is somewhat of a taboo in Norway to have people do work for you without paying them.
Good.
But I'm afraid that's contested now, or that we have some patterns that allows for that. But yeah.
Just out of interest, has there been an increase in the number of graduates arriving in the job market in the last, say, 10, 15 years?
Yeah, there are more people now taking higher education and higher degrees. So, yeah. And this is a point of telling this anecdote. Not the point itself, but during this talk, in I guess in the fourth tip, I managed to call my previous head of department a drittsekk.
Nice.
And I instantly regretted it, because I don't want to be that person that calls people out for being a drittsekk or a shitbag, if you want. But,
this is the difference between live performance and pre-recorded.
Oof. Yeah.
So what happened? What did you do at that point? Did you, like, backpedal furiously and call even more attention to it, or...?
No, I just moved on. But the reason this became a thing that I had to think about is that I, after the fact... discovered that the whole thing was filmed and published on Facebook.
And
so now I guess I have to own it. And I sort of do, because it wasn't without reason.
I'm sure.
I gave this person the title. I much prefer to call out the actions and so on. But yeah, there it is.
You're on the record.
And what it told me is that I still have some emotional baggage from that experience pretty much 2 years ago now. Which perhaps makes this a good time to dive into our backgrounds as... ambitious students seeking a career in the academy, in research.
Right.
And why we aren't anymore.
Right.
The origin stories.
I just realized it's like 6 years yesterday or something that I left. Maybe the day before.
To the day? You light a candle or...
No, but I remember it was like a holiday weekend in the UK. And at one end of the holiday weekend, I was an academic, and the other end, I wasn't. All right.
I also think it's good to... It will provide some context to the show and to our psyche, I guess.
Oh, we only have one between us? Shit.
Yeah.
I'm going to save up for my own.
Our collective psyche, perhaps?
Yeah. I think there's a joint bruised psyche shared by all sometime academics. That we all just kind of, it's this cloud that we just sort of inhabit.
I think you're right. So let's start with the beginnings. What led us to the university and academic studies?
Do you want to start?
You can start because I have talked quite a lot now.
Okay. Have a break. Drink some coffee.
When was the first time you thought about entering the university?
That's a great question. I don't know. I guess at some point in my teenage years, it became not just an option, but a likely thing. Like if you don't completely suck at school, even when I was a student, if you didn't completely suck at school, it was quite likely that you were going to go to university, particularly if your parents had been. Both my parents were the first people in their families to go to university. But I think as far as they were concerned, it was a given that I would go. And because I kind of had some academic aptitude, no one really questioned that. I didn't really question it very much. I think the question was more like, what am I going to do? What am I going to study? And when I was growing up as a teenager, some of my role models were engineers. And I started thinking that that would be cool. Like originally, when I was about 9 or 10, I wanted to be an architect. And I didn't quite give up on that. I was still mulling that as a possibility. But at the same time, I knew all these engineers, and that sounded kind of interesting. And like they had a life that I liked, you know, like allowed a lot of time for kind of kayaking and stuff like that out of school, which is important to me as a teenager. And I thought really hard about going to art school, really hard about going to art school. There are some very good art schools in the UK, and Glasgow specifically was the one that I thought about going to, because I did art all the way through school. And I came to the conclusion all by myself. I think my parents were very relieved, but at no point did they push me. But I came to the conclusion all by myself that I probably wasn't going to make any money afterwards if I went to art school, rightly or wrongly. And I was just like, right, okay, I'm not going to do that. What can I do? Okay, how about I go and I do engineering? So I rocked up at university. Like, you know, I got the requisite grades and stuff like that. Rocked up at university. Engineering's pretty dull. I really like the maths. I really like the computer science. I like the physics that I was doing, which all of these were kind of geared around engineering, but they were all still, you know, subjects I recognized from school. Engineering was really dull. It was electronic and electrical, triple E. And 5 weeks in, I went to see my guidance person, tutor, whatever, and just went, I'm not sure this is for me. And he said, okay, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, can I swap to the science faculty? Because I was in engineering. And can I take with me the maths and physics and just pick up something else as like a third subject? And he was like, yeah, it's good that you came, because if you come next week, we might not have let you. It would be too late. We might not have let you switch. So I went and I picked up psychology as a third subject. And it was great. It was really good. 4 years later, I graduated with a psychology degree. I don't know, like, how much detail. I can keep talking about this, but like, how much detail do you want me to go into?
Yeah, we are still trying to stay in the things that led up to it, or perhaps also the first time in your university, which you covered, I guess. But you mentioned that you decided not to do arts because of the lesser perspective to earn afterwards.
So was not art, but art, to be very specific. So I'm not talking about an arts and humanities degree. I'm talking about actually studying fine art.
Yeah.
Painting.
But you decided not to because of the, well,
it,
I guess.
It didn't seem like the prospects were very, very good afterwards.
But is that... is there a peer pressure to is that a huge, well, of course how you're going to earn is a huge concern for anybody, but I find it interesting because in my upbringing, that wasn't that much of a conversation. How are you going to earn for things afterwards?
It wasn't a conversation in my world. Like, at no point, yeah. I think, did my parents go, we know you're thinking about going to art school. Do you think that might not be economically very good? I have no recollection of having any conversation with them about that. I think
not
it was
from your peers either?
Nah, not at all. Not that I recall, anyway. I have a really bad memory, though, so it's possible that conversation happened. I must have got that impression from somewhere, right, that, like, going to art school would lead to being less wealthy. And it's not that I grew up wanting to be wealthy in any way. I just wanted to know that I might be able to work and earn money. I don't remember being otherwise particularly, like, economically focused as a kid, but apparently that was a concern when I was thinking about what to do.
But what, how much, as much as you can say, was what went into the decision? I guess you first pursued engineering because you imagined that it was interesting or fun, or that was something you wanted to work with?
Yeah, it's a very practical subject. I really like practical stuff. Yeah. It kind of combines a lot of theory and kind of interesting nerdy science with practical, really practical stuff. Like, here's a problem, we have to solve it using the available tools and constraints. You know, that's a fun thing.
Yeah, you mentioned that you had some aptitude for academics early on, but could you say something more about, were you a science kid? Did you read encyclopedias and so on? Which stereotype should we fit you into? Okay, yeah.
I don't know whether I fit easily into one. Like, we seem to have adopted these kind of cookie cutter, from the US, these sort of cookie cutter high school roles. Like, you have to be a, you know, this wasn't a thing when I was growing up. Like, you know, you didn't have to be like a jock or a nerd or a weird kid or whatever. But there seems to be more implicit or explicit pressure to conform to one of those. And when I was growing up, I was just a teenager. And early on, I was interested in football. I cycled a lot. I kayaked a lot. I got less interested in football because it was, like, really fucking tribal and I just lost all patience with that. Do you know, I read science fiction, I read everything I could get my hands on, including lots of biography. I didn't read encyclopedias wall to wall, but I read a lot of stuff that was kind of, you know, written for adults. Not like adult literature, but like just stuff I just read. I'm just trying to think, what kind of kid was I? I guess by the time I was leaving school,
did you read?
Again, I have a terrible memory. No amount of reading seems to embed information. I read a lot of biographies because the biography shelf in the library proved interesting. Like, you start with people who are on television and then you just kind of work out from there. I read random stuff like almanacs, stuff that was on my parents' bookshelves. By the time I was leaving school, so I did physics all the way through school, and a group of us who had mostly studied physics or chemistry used to hang out in the sixth year physics classroom, which is the final year in school in Scotland. And I guess you can take that as an indication of the kind of kids that we were. Like, most of us were doing maths and physics and chemistry and stuff like that. And the group that I was hanging around with included several prefects, the head boy, the head girl, etc.
Prefects?
Yeah, this is a weird thing. So we didn't have...
I know this from the Harry Potter books, right. I think, but yeah.
We didn't have any of this. This was like complete astroturfing, right? The school decided that it would be good. Like, they went through phases of kind of having enthusiasms about stuff. Like, there was a time when everyone had to wear a uniform and then they kind of relaxed again about it. And then there was a time when they were like, we're going to have prefects and we're going to have a head boy and a head girl and a deputy head boy and a deputy head girl. And we were like, okay. And they went to nice...
It sounds like the Stanford school experiment.
Yeah, right. To me. to be fair, they all went to good, nice people. there was no abuse of power. It was actually, it was really nice. And because they were kind of my kind of people, it wasn't weird or awkward. I don't know how other kids felt. But yeah, anyway, so bit nerdy, bit bookish, no surprises. We should talk about your experience. I've talked now for a while.
Yeah, I thought about this this morning, and I'm as you, I have generally a bad memory, or not a bad memory, but not that, not many memories, perhaps. So and also doing this retrospective, it's always a construction, right?
Right, memory is intrinsically reconstructive.
Yeah, right. But from what I can remember, what I think led me to university is kind of the same story. I also was a pretty, in some ways, regular kid, cycling. I had scouts, right?
Right.
Lots of practical stuff, lots of outside time. But I also read a lot.
What did you read?
My students were student. My parents were students when I grew up, and so I was. They introduced a lot of literature to me. I grew up with Astrid Lindgren and
right
and all that stuff, but I can remember from, I think this was, it was in primary school, and it was published in 91, so this is going to
make me feel old.
Perhaps. I have to do some calculations here. I guess I was 7 or 8 years old when it came out. But
wait,
my
the
mom,
it in the sentence being...
Yeah, it come...
Okay, sorry.
The it is the book Sophie's World, which you perhaps have heard about, yeah. And this tells a lot about me, but I think I was given this book like when I was 8 or 9. And I remember that my mom read some of it to me, but I also read in the book myself. It's not the densest book, but it's quite dense. But I also remember bringing it to school to also give the appearance of reading this book about philosophy.
You poser!
Yeah, indeed.
At the age of like 9 years old. Oh my god!
Pretentious little irritating kid, but I also caught the interest in philosophy at that time, and the author of Sophie's World, Jostein Gaarder, also wrote a book which were in the same vein, I guess, but more, not interesting, but more...
dense?
No, less dense. More involving, perhaps. Hmm. And which I remember, I borrowed it at the library, like the books on tape version.
Right.
And these were... real tapes.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Cassettes, yeah. I remember a summer where we had that in the car, because our relatives lives all around the southern part of Norway, so it was quite a lot of driving. The my childhood summers.
This
and
is where your
books on tape.
This is where your podcast habit comes from.
Yeah, I think so. And also, like the library, I spent some time in the library. I mostly read comics, I guess, and some books as well. But I also were a pretty large consumer of books on tape.
Hmm.
But yeah, that would explain my podcast listening habits. or tolerance, perhaps. But the point is that I guess being someone interested in the pursuit of knowledge were something that entered my identity from early on. And also the interest in literature and the written word.
Right.
And also giving the impression of being such a person. Which is perhaps not that cool, but somewhat honest. I think many of us have that. But,
yeah, I have no moral high ground. I'm sure I've done things many, many times just to look more cool than I actually was.
But your story is interesting because I too also leaned towards engineering, but more specifically the electrical engineering stuff.
That is interesting. What happened there?
Things, devices and stuff like that. And also, obviously, the interest in computers also came pretty early on.
Right. Yeah, you grew up with computers in a way that I just didn't, which is partly about my being older, and it's also partly about the kind of house I grew up in.
Yeah. Yes and no, I guess. So, but I didn't really use the internet before I was 15, but perhaps it was later for you.
20. At university, as a student.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess I grew up with it somewhat differently, yeah. I made my first web page at ungdomsskolen.
Was that as part of class or by yourself?
No, by myself.
I used to play with whatever the paint package was on the classic Mac out of school time. What's that called? Is it just called Paint? Or is that Microsoft?
Not on the... That's Microsoft.
Yeah. Well, whatever that was called. The one where you could draw with textures.
And some years later, you're still doing that.
In higher definition.
Yeah. Vectors. And in high school, or videregående, I still struggle with the school systems.
They don't mesh very neatly.
Yeah.
Don't sweat it.
But I, even though I knew that I was probably going to end up at the humanities, I still pursued math and physics and chemistry. And I failed badly in chemistry, mainly because of the teacher. But
that's a recurring theme.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was an eccentric, but yeah. But and I found those subjects pretty interesting. At one time, I began to see the environment as force vectors. That was pretty interesting.
Wow, what were you kids smoking where you grew up?
This was due to my active imagination, I guess, having air quotes read Sophie's World at the early point.
Right.
But but yeah. But also during those times, I became pretty involved in music and playing in a band and being... identifying with the grunge era and trying for sort of an oppositional thing, growing my hair out and so on.
You had dreadlocks, right?
I had dreadlocks or something.
We need pictures.
Are there pictures? There probably are pictures. perhaps this will be the cover art. I don't know. But yeah. And that came in somewhat of a conflict, I guess. Because I didn't do as great in school as I probably could because my focus stared more towards hanging out with my musician friends and so on. And I spent pretty much all the math classes in the back of the classroom just fooling around and messing with stuff. So, which I regret now because I would like to have learned the stuff better. But yeah.
So how did all this resolve? Because you're describing your kind of free time stuff. You're describing kids that I knew at school and they just went right off the road academically, not necessarily as failures, like they were bright kids who could do fine in school, but they had no interest in the academic life. Like they chose other things. They chose countercultural things or things that were more alternative or things that had more to do with music or skateboarding or whatever. And it was almost like an either or choice. It wasn't possible to do both. You kind of had to choose because you had to focus enough to get the grades to go to university. So what happened to you?
This is pretty much the story of my adult life because you say you had to choose, but you don't really have to choose. You can do both.
You can do both if you don't need to sleep and you're pretty bright.
But I guess I always has been somewhat of an eclectic. I guess there you could spin a Freudian narrative around that, but
really,
let's not.
Okay, good. I can't think of it, but I'm not a Freudian, as we may have covered before.
But also during Videregående had friends that had been enrolled in university and lived in Bergen. And I guess I became a bit more ambitious the last year, where also my musician friends also become more ambitious. And then I didn't have to move on. No, I was quite involved still. I played with them. But they pursued more. Prioritized playing with each other and so on because they were way much better musicians than I were because they went to the music they followed the music line or the so they had that education.
Had they all been to like school to do this? Like were they all older than you or
no? I'm mixing it up. So my peers, my friends, they went to the line, or they had music courses
in school.
In school, right. And I had the preparation for higher education thing.
So there's different tracks, that you can be on.
Different tracks, but the same school. So we hanged around, right? And I guess we were slightly more pursuing our own thing the last year. So I geared up my academic ambitions then and worked more. And my in the Norwegian subject the last year, you have to do a sort of a thesis. So it's this larger project. We could choose whatever we wanted to write about and so on. Ourselves. So I decided, I and a friend, we decided to do it on Arnes, which is one of the Norway's most famous philosophers. He did a lot to develop the Norwegian university education and so on. So we did our thing on him, where we also traveled to Bergen to talk with a philosopher about Arnes and so on. And there I was introduced to university life, and also I got to hang around with my older friends there. And it was pretty appealing.
What did you see there that you hadn't known about before? Like, what was it that was tempting?
It seemed just the fact that you could spend the day going to some lectures and afterwards hang around in the canteen and just discuss stuff, just talk around more. I guess just I should just embrace the fact that it sounds pretentious, but yeah, just discuss intellectual things, right? Have meaningful conversations and so on.
Really let your intellectual flag fly.
Yeah, but also the perceived freedom, I guess, or just deciding on how your day should look like yourself.
Mm. How many hours a week is studying in the humanities? Like, how many hours a week is formal teaching?
It's more now than when I first began, but I guess we had, I think it was like a maximum of 3 lectures a week, mm-hmm. or something. It was not much.
Was a lecture 1 hour, 2 hours?
2 hours, right. but it's like it became more throughout my studies because they saw that students tended not to show up, so it became more like obligatory workshops and right. stuff like that, which probably is a good thing, but yeah.
I guess that kind of 6 hours formal curriculum a week plus go and do your own reading and think about life is going to work for some people, but not very well for others.
Yeah, but the fact that more people take up higher education, it provides some dilemmas.
Oh yeah.
And it's hard to both sort of meet the expectations of those highly ambitious and those who feel that they probably should have this great degree, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you applied to go to university, what were you applying to do?
So my first choice, because in Norway you have to, I think you can apply, you have to choose 3 degrees or programs or the like in the prioritized order.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your first, second and third choice. And I think you are guaranteed to get one of these. Because you have the right to enter higher education, because it's paid by the state. So
what about grades? Like, is it dependent on you getting a certain mark? Or?
Yeah. So within those 3 choices, there are, you compete with grades.
Mm.
So
you pick like the kind of the top performing thing, and then you pick the harder thing, and then you pick the medium thing, and then you pick the low thing, or and then you're like, well, that's my kind of safe option if the grades don't go
yeah.
well.
So what I did on my first choice, it was the program for the history of ideas. So kind of philosophy, but not that. It was kind of a mix of philosophy, history, and actually the study of religion.
Mm. I only learned last week, availability heuristic klaxon, I only learned that Norwegian actually has a word for the history of ideas.
Idehistoria?
Yeah. I found it in the dictionary at random, and I was like, this is fascinating. I had no idea this was even a thing. The history of ideas was a thing, and Norwegian has a word for it. I mean, English has a word for it too, but it's really a phrase.
Yeah. We also so what I did in graduate school was begrepshistoria, which in English is the history of concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, that was
in,
your...
In German is Begriffsgeschichte. Yeah.
Look at you. That was your first choice, history of ideas.
Yeah, my second choice were medicine.
Obviously.
And that was just because my mom wanted to tell her friends that, yeah, he did apply for medicine.
Okay, so that was the final, put it on the list. But you didn't seriously intend to do it?
Well, it was obvious that I didn't had a... You need more than good grades to get into that program, so it was more tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
And I don't remember the third choice, really. I think it actually was psychology or something.
Thanks. Were these all at Bergen?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Because as I said, I had friends. And I had a place to move into. So I applied for university and moved out. And a part of the story is also, So I applied for university and I moved out. And part of the story is also that I also moved from a place at age 19, I moved out and began university studies.
Did it live up to expectations? Did it provide you with sufficient opportunities to pose around, mulling philosophical things while carrying impressive-looking books? Chatting to the ladies with a book under your arm. Oh, this? Oh, yeah, I'm just reading Descartes.
Except for lady parts, pretty much.
Lady parts are something else.
Also, it were... I got introduced to World of Warcraft. And I had to make some life decisions.
This is funny. Sorry, part of the reason for my laugh is that I spent a very, very substantial part of the period following my introduction to the internet and the open 24 hours university computer clusters, not on World of Warcraft, but in mushes and muds and multi-user shared stations, multi-user dungeons, multi-user online environments, where all there was text and you typed into a box and stuff happened, and it was the best thing ever. I lost so much sleep to that.
And we still spend our days typing text into to forms.
Yeah.
And creating these imaginary dungeons.
Right.
I will begin to call our Slack the dungeon, actually.
Right. Oh, so, that's unsettling for many reasons.
So the first year, I spent quite a lot of time in Azeroth, and then I decided this will probably not help my after-university career.
Right.
Or in-university career.
That was a very mature decision.
I'm not sure it were that mature at the time, as in that considered, but... I think I decided to need to quit this.
So you just go cold turkey, or?
Yeah, pretty much. So my studies also became more engaging, so that's part of it. I guess that was the origin stories.
I guess so. I guess in the next episode we can follow up and find out how you developed academic superpowers and learn to use them responsibly.
Likewise.
Hmm.
Should we do some follow-up before we wrap this bucket up?
I think we should. You talked last week about Hat on a Stick, about the Halling dance. And I diligently went off and I found videos, and many videos on YouTube, of the traditional dance that I guess gets done on Sedna Mai National Day in Norway. And I went to look for this video and I watched one and it's awesome. It's unexpectedly impressive. I do not want to bear the children of the person who is doing this. But goodness, that's impressive. Like I did martial arts for several years, and on my best day, I don't think I could have done most of the things that this guy does. Really impressed by this. Everybody has to go watch the guy kick the hat off the stick and all the lead up to that, because like the preamble of this is as impressive. It just gets, it's like an extended warm up for the moment where he kicks the hat off the stick, but it's a very fun and impressive warm up. And I can see where you were at with the kind of breakdancing and hip hop and similar. I suppose we should mention that the Carrot fan service is just continuing in Scum to the point where it seems to have become an in-joke.
Yeah. I guess we could bring in Freud for this as well, but we shouldn't. That's my comment.
Okay. My husband found that there is a new gondola, a new thing that you can ride up the mountain.
Gesundheit?
It's Lohn? Hovenlohn? Is this making any sense?
So Lohn is probably a place?
Yes, yes it is. Yeah. It's in Strinn, if you know where that is.
Ah, or Nordfjord.
I had to, like, the three ingredients in this, the address of this thing, and it doesn't clarify it for me at all. So it's Lohn, Strinn, Nordfjord.
Strinn is pretty close to where I had my childhood, actually. So
it looks like near Stranda or somewhere like that. It's beautiful.
Mountains.
And they've built this new gondola thing, this new kind of thing that, chairlift, not chairlift, what do you call it? Cabina thing. Thing that you get in, it takes you up the mountain. It's like an enclosed box that hangs from a cable or whatever. Cable car. There we go.
Is that a cable car?
Yes. I think so. Not to be confused with things that are cable cars in San Francisco, which is something else, right? Yeah. We have a taxonomical issue here, I feel. Anyway, this thing looks amazing. It looks beautiful. It's super nice. And then you look at the prices. And it is...
Woohoo!
Yeah. Yeah. So to go up the mountain and down again as an adult costs 485 Norwegian kroner, which is just under 50 UK pounds, or maybe like $75 or something like that, maybe 65, I don't know. That's a lot of dollars to go up and down a mountain. I was, even in Norway, where things can seem expensive to visitors from overseas, I was impressed / horrified by this. Would you, as a Norwegian, would you care to comment?
Do you think it's worth it?
I don't know. We did have the discussion where we were like, it looks great, though. If we were in the vicinity, would we go up? Maybe. Once.
I guess you can choose. You can have, like, three bears, or you can do this.
Sorry. You threw me. It's the bears, beers thing again. I was like... Three bears. Are we going to talk about Goldilocks and porridge now? I have a little bias here because I actually ate porridge this morning before I came. So I guess that's priming me for the potential to think about Goldilocks. Anyway, moving on. Our colleague Ivan said to me that he thought Brits might be hardier than Scandinavians.
Why?
Yeah, that was kind of my question. I need to find out more, I think. I think he felt he lived and studied in the UK for a while, and I think he felt that the clothes people wore in cold weather were sort of indicative of the fact that they were a bit more tough. And I said I thought they were just impractically dressed. We need to talk about your impressions of the UK. It's not going to be these episodes, but we need to talk about that.
Yeah, but yeah, I see his point, actually.
Really?
Especially in British teenage girls are probably the hardiest people in the world.
Because they go out in nothing and like a short skirt and...
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, that was my point. And I was like, yes, themselves. alcohol. There's a phrase called preloading, whereby you have a drink at home before you go out Because it's cheaper, and then when you go out, you're already drunk.
Yeah, but you say that, but I also have observed these hardy teenagers outside of drinking hours.
Yeah. I couldn't do it. And nothing to do with, like, any judgment about clothing, merely just no thanks.
Is that why you were thrown out? To live among the less hardy Scandinavians.
Right, where everyone's just got
the
a down jacket.
Scandinavians.
People in Scandinavia know how to dress for the weather, though. I think we touched on this before. Like, they wear the right clothing pretty much all the time. I should note, I went soft living in London. I used to have much higher tolerance for cold and wet, and combined cold and wet. And then I moved to England, and then I moved even further south to London. And one goes soft, turns out. Anyway, special brew. If I say to you special brew, what do you think of?
I think of the stuff that especially taverns have behind the counter, which is all the rest of the undrunk beers from last night, which I can sort of refactor. And now I forgot to mention that I also played like role playing games.
Yeah.
During university.
Yeah, guilty. Yeah,
From that. Yeah. Stuff you probably don't want to drink.
Oh, that would never have occurred to me. You're a nasty man.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. The reason I bring it up was that I was in a coffee place and they had a...
No, you didn't. Did you go for the special brew?
No. But they had...
At the coffee place?
No. Hear me out. They had... So in Norway, the coffee chains... I was at a station and the coffee chains mostly do espresso-based drinks, but they also have, like, regular coffee, right? Which is just, I guess, drip. But they kind of decant it into, like, a big thermos container thing, and then you can kind of... You know, you just sort of scoosh out that into a cup, and that's just, like, quote-unquote regular coffee. The kind of thing you can't actually almost get in places like Starbucks anymore, like, but just coffee, vanlig coffee, normal coffee. And they had one labelled special brew, and my husband looked at it and went, because in the UK and particularly in Scotland, special brew is like high-strength beer. It's not really actively preferred by anyone who is young and wants to drink. It's kind of the cheap old men's... or worse, kind of drink. It just connotes kind of poor quality, high alcohol content. I thought you would go with coffee, but thanks for the tavern insight that you brought us there. I'm taking my mage and my rogue, and I'm leaving without you. You can catch us up on the road. So, we have just...
Apropos robes.
Indeed. The very lovely... The very nicely named, very amusingly for an English speaker, named Kristi Himmelfartstag.
Farts.
Yes. Has been the latest in our current string of holidays, which are almost over. And actually, I might need you to explain this to me, because in my head this is Ascension Day, but then I'm wondering what next Monday is.
I was thinking about the
you were thinking divine, about farts,
the divine farts that rocketed Jesus to the heavens.
If you hadn't previously been I don't know, like, banned or excommunicated or whatever, like, yeah, I think you're out of that now. Wow. What does it mean? So it's literally Christ heaven journey day or heaven travel day,
and that's Ascension.
Yeah. Okay, so what's Monday?
I think it's Pentecost weekend or something.
Okay.
So on first day, Jesus ascended to the celestial heavens to dwell amongst with his Father and so on. And next week, that's the week where the disciples get their get the Holy Spirit and the gifts, and they can talk in any language and so on.
Okay, cool. I look forward to that. My point was going to be about Kristi Himmelfahrtsdag. Was that apparently there were many complaints, 20-odd complaints, that too many people on this this holy day, which everybody has off work, were using circular saws and angle grinders and other DIY equipment loudly. And this is apparently not on. And could people please have more consideration for the fact that this is a holy day? Literally, I went cycling like Thursday, Friday. Literally everywhere you went, it was people doing very noisy DIY with the aforementioned circular saws, angle grinders, if I knew what an angle grinder was, and mowing their grass and doing all of this stuff. It was a very loud outdoor DIY holiday, I would say.
Yeah, and here you have these strange secular religious landscape of Norway, because we still have the holidays. We still have the... So all the stores are closed and so on. And we also still have the Protestant work ethic. So you should spend your holiday working, improving your dwellings, and so on. But that comes in conflict with... there are laws that say that you shouldn't make much noise during sort of the holiday time or church hours or something like that. So
painting good, hammering bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess you could paint loudly also, but... No, but yeah.
Cultural picks?
Yeah, my cultural pick is Sophie's World. Go figure.
Okay, nice. I feel bad I didn't read it.
It was translated into many languages.
I know. My guy that I dated at uni and was subsequently friends
languages.
With read it in first year, and I was really impressed with it. I should pick up a copy. Ideally in Norwegian, actually, that would help.
Yeah.
I presume you read it in Norwegian when you were reading it as the precocious 9-year-old. Or were you so precocious that you just read it
this
in English?
This was before it was published in translation, so... Yeah.
You hipster precocious 9-year-old. You read it before it was cool.
So, yeah.
All right.
I think it holds up. It also, it's relevant because, spoiler warning, no, I won't spoil it. It's relevant.
Okay. One of the reasons I think I should read it, actually, is that I had a very straight and narrow science and kind of STEM subject education after a certain age, with the exception of German and art. And so I missed out on all the philosophy. I missed out on everything like that. So I feel like it would be like a... what are they called? Cliff Notes for a philosophy. Yeah. So that's a good reason to read that.
Yes.
My cultural pick, I have called Javi Elsikler I dette landet. Thank you. Which is electric bikes, which is really just a thin premise to talk about cycling. So electric bikes have become a thing. A huge thing in Norway. Sales have gone up. There's a paper, there's a piece from the paper which we can link to and run through Google Translate. But more and more people have suddenly started to buy electrical bicycles, which is kind of cool. But I wanted to talk, the cultural pick of the week that I had is really all about cycling. Excuse me. So we cycled in Berlin. It reminded me how much I miss cycling. I cycled a lot. As a teen and as a student and as a grown-up, actually. Like, I kind of had periods where I didn't do it a lot, but then I moved to London. I did quite a lot of cycling, commuting in London, which is, like, terrifying. and challenging, but also like it's a good way to sort of remind you that you're still alive, I guess. So I say that, like, every year several people die in London bike traffic, under buses and lorries and things in accidents. It's genuinely actually quite dangerous. Anyway, cycling around Berlin, which felt relatively safe, was awesome. It reminded me how much I miss cycling around. So when I came back, my husband recently bought a bike to commute to work. And when I came back, I rented a bike from Bicycle, which is the Oslo-based bike rental system, where you can just hire a bike for 45 minutes. And you can keep it for longer if you want. They bill you like 5 kroner an hour or something like that, or 5 kroner every quarter or something. After that, for a maximum of something like 6 hours. And it's enough, you know, you can do that and it costs you not too much to rent a bike for the day and go out and go and cycle around outside town or go and have a barbecue on the beach or stuff like that. And it was great, but the bike was really heavy. The brakes only worked if you squeezed them like you were throttling someone you hated. And it was this heavy thing that made a kind of banging noise every time you went over a bump. And I was like, right, I need to get myself a bike. So I went on Finn, because this is how you get anything in Norway that's secondhand, is you look on Finn, N-O, and you find bicycles. And I found several. They were a little bit more than I wanted to spend, but okay. I went to try and view one, and I had the very amusing experience of meeting a person who, of course, you shake hands with, you know, hi, you know, nice to meet you. This would not happen in the UK. You'd almost never shake hands with someone you're going to buy a secondhand bicycle from in the UK. And he couldn't get the seat down low enough for me. It had become, I think, rusted in position. So I had to, the bike was fine, but I had to say no because the seat was too high. Neither of us could shift it. We banged it with literally everything that was available. We tried all the tools. We tried all the lubricant sprays. Could not shift it. So, okay, that was kind of an amusing and slightly awkward thing. The whole experience of just going to look at a bike that someone is selling also made me wonder, like, what Finn is really a front for. Like, are there kind of hookup communities and stuff like that that use like bicycle sales or something like that? Like, do, you know, does one occasionally accidentally wander into trying to buy a secondhand loot or something like that and then find that that's actually code? It was a kind of interesting experience. And then the second bike that I went to view was great. It needed air in the tyres and stuff, but it was basically new and hadn't been used and had just been shoved in the garage because the guy had bought it thinking it was going to have fat off-road tyres, and it didn't. It had really, really thin road tyres. It's a single speed. I own a single speed bike in a country known for having some hills. My husband's bike is a single speed. I thought it would level the playing field a little bit. It's flipping amazing. It is the most fun I've had working out in ever. It's really challenging, but it's great. I could, if I was really hardcore, I could flip the back wheel round and make it into a fixie, where I would have to pedal all the time. Every time the wheels move, you have to pedal. I'm not fit enough for that. I've realised after several days using this thing, I'm not fit enough to do that, because to go down a hill, you have to control the speed. Like, either your legs are doing 200 RPM as you go down this huge, huge hill, or you have to go really slowly. And it does have brakes, but if you didn't have brakes, you would have to control the downward speed down the hill with your legs. No one is fit enough for this. Certainly not me. Anyway, so it's been amazing. It's been really fun, and it's allowed me to go and have a barbecue on the beach out of town and cycle around and go out at like 10 p.m. at night where it's still light and cycle around just for fun. I've done like 70 kilometers since getting this bike, and not all of them were flat.
So I did almost exactly the same thing last week. I bought a bicycle in Finn.
That's funny. Was this because of Berlin?
Yeah, partly. Because not only because of the cycling, but all the drinking and eating of fatty food.
You have post-Berlin regret.
Yeah, I have to get in shape or get less in shape.
Well, I think you've gone to the right place. Now, I have to ask you, did you get a single speed?
No. I got a hybrid because I have 3 Norwegian miles between my home and the office.
What's that in kilometers? Because a Norwegian mile is not an English mile. Or an American mile.
30. Well, so that's 30 kilometers.
There and back, or just one way?
One way.
Oof. You're going to cycle the whole thing?
So I need some gears, and also it's quite hilly, so yeah.
Is there like a cycle route that you can take?
Yeah.
Cool. Hmm. How many gears you got?
I think I have 24.
That seems slightly excessive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I find really interesting? I did the same route up a hill with a rental bike that had gears and with my new bike, which doesn't. And it was easier without the gears. It was easier standing than it was to go up sitting down a long, hard hill with the right gears. I'm fascinated by this. I think it's like a mechanics thing. I think it's got something to do with how legs work. Mm. Anyway, I also got overtaken by a guy on a mountain bike. I got overtaken by everyone on the single speed. I got overtaken by a guy on a mountain bike who had like millions of gears and just went past me and went, ah, single speed, d'abord.
Yeah, cool.
Cycling for the win.
Yeah. Also, I will add a link to the show notes. Not that great image from Google Maps of the bicycle counter in Bergen.
Mm.
So it counts the amount of cycles that pass that right. Each day.
There's one near here somewhere as well. I forget yeah. where. Nice.
I have a meeting in like 12 minutes.
All right. We should do quickly the words of the week.
We should do your word of the week because I haven't done my homework.
How did you make it through academia?
I don't have any more words.
Brunsted. Brown place. Brunt pub, maybe? Brunt pub?
Yeah.
I found out this was a thing a couple of weeks ago. Explain to me a brown pub.
It's the place where the alcoholics will go.
That was to the point. Is this what would in the UK?
Everything that you can, yeah. That's any place in the UK, right?
Ouch! Is this what we would call an old men's pub?
Yeah.
And why is it called a brown place?
I don't know.
Is it typically dark? Are the walls brown? Are they panelled with wood?
Let's say that perhaps there's not that much investment in the furniture.
Hmm. So brown is used for, like, is this a kind of thin cipher for dirty / shitty, or is it just old and a bit tired?
Somewhere in that area, I guess.
Hmm. I was trying to think about the taxonomy of pubs in the UK and how old men's pub is a very well-used phrase to describe what you're getting, which I think is the same as Brunsted. But it's like you can flip that very easily into gastropub, you know, somewhere where you might go to kind of have a nice pub meal, or into like hipster old school pub. And it's maybe not that apparent what the differences are. I guess you know when you walk in if the piano player stops. There's not actually a piano player, but, you know.
I don't have that much to say about it, actually. But, yeah, it is an expression. It is the thing.
Have you ever drunk beer in such a place?
Yeah, probably.
Was it different because you were atypical of the kind of people who would drink there?
So there are brunsteder, which it's sort of a mixed crowd, I guess.
Mm.
For example, in Bergen, you have Fotballpubben. The football pub. Which is a brown pub, but it also is the place where they show the football matches, so it will bring in people that don't usually go to brown places. So it's complex.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this kind of interesting interaction in the UK as well between like pubs and football. We can get into that another time. Or not. I have so little interest in football now, I can't even begin to say.
We won't have an episode on football.
Please, let's not have an episode on football.
We could have an episode about how to not have an episode of football.
Yeah, I think that's what people listen for. Yeah. I know I do.
Right, I have work.
Yeah, me too.
Next time, we will talk about our years within the university. And
I may need to attend some therapy to be able to deal with some
regression.
Of this. Yeah. Linear or stepwise, or how would you like it? Stats, joke.
I guess. Right. Where can people find all the links and stuff?
If you go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm, you will find everything, links to everything we've mentioned, we hope, and all the episodes. And please rate us on iTunes if you have access to iTunes. Are there things that people can rate us on that aren't iTunes? It seems very... Like, I never open iTunes anymore.
Yeah, well, they can contact us directly, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they can just go into some random forum and promote us.
There's a contact form on the website.
Should we have a subreddit?
Oh, dear no. I don't think so.
Go to the Small Differences thing on 4chan and promote the stuff.
Or don't, or and say you
just
did.
Just forget that.
If you like us, tell your friends.
Cut that out.
If you don't like us, stop listening.
Please DDoS our podcast page.
That's how you know you've made it.
Servers. Yeah. Right. Takk for nå.
Takk for nå.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.